Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was at the prison yesterday in Avenel, and this talk, which I'm going to give a very abbreviated version of, was on compassion. And it probably took about an hour and 20 minutes, but there was a lot of interaction and questions and like that, examples and personal experiences. But there were, I think, maybe 10 men there. This part of it's a men's facility. It always surprises me, even though I've been doing this now for at least a year and a half, how dedicated these guys are to the practice. I don't remember what it's called, but there's a particular practice where you commit yourself to sit 1,001 days without missing. And this one guy, Joe, if you met him on the street, he would be afraid. I mean, he's got a great big long beard, and he looks pretty ferocious. So he dedicated himself, and he did this. And actually, he's not ferocious. And I may have mentioned this before, but it's like these guys view prison as their temple. And they use this, by reframing it for themselves. They use this prison as sort of, I guess I would call a holy place. So it was interesting. It was interesting how they related to this, how they related to compassion, and how they could actually relate it to their own lives, even though they're confined. So that's just sort of a backdrop. How many of you know what a bodhisattva is or what that means?
Someone who prolongs their enlightenment to help relieve the suffering of others.
Yeah, this is the story or the backdrop to this is sort of myth, which doesn't mean that it's not true. And there's the Kuan Yin, who is female, is considered the bodhisattva of mercy and compassion. But you don't have to be special to be a bodhisattva. It's anybody, like Wendy said, that commits their life to the service of others. And they put aside their own personal desire to become enlightened, which in a sense you could say is truly selfless, that they devote this incarnation, this life, to helping others who are suffering. And so the bodhisattva vows to live in the world and receive all the difficult feelings and experiences that arise in our daily life and live in a way that you realize that life includes everything and everyone. So if you're listening to the world, you're listening to the cries of the world, it gives you a direction of how to serve and where to serve. One of the things that they say about a bodhisattva is that the bodhisattva can assume many forms. And each form is used in service of another. Sometimes a bodhisattva says stop doing something to harm yourself or to harm others. So the bodhisattva assumes the role of being an authority figure. Stop. But it's done with an open heart, and it's done in service of that person. Sometimes a bodhisattva appears as a good friend who will sit with you, hold your hand as you talk about the suffering that you go through. So the bodhisattva, the idea of a bodhisattva is that. But even though it's part of the Buddhist mythology, it's also, I think, true. And I think that's what's been taught in Buddhism. So this is sort of used as a metaphor for the practice. There are an infinite number of bodhisattvas who move in the world. Now, it occurred to me when I was thinking about what to talk about through these guys, how many of you are familiar with the Zen Peacemaker Order that was started by Bernie Glassman? Okay. And so I won't spend a lot of time talking about Bernie because I've talked about him before. But there are three basic tenets that the Peacemaker organization functions on. These three tenets guide the way the Peacemaker operation works. And it occurred to me that if you listen to these, what it's really about is there are instructions on how to become a bodhisattva. And so there are three of these tenets. I'm sure that you've heard of these before, but I'd like you to think of them in terms of guidance for each one of us, how to live and move in the world as a bodhisattva, how to live and move in service of others, and how we have to prepare ourselves to do that so we don't add difficulty to the circumstance. And so the first one, which is I've talked about ad nauseum probably, is not knowing. And this is really the base of being a peacemaker, being a bodhisattva. And if you recall, that's the case 20 of the Mumin Khan, which is where a wandering monk passes Joshu at his temple, and Joshu asks him, "Where are you heading?" And the monk says, "I don't know." And Joshu says to him, "Not knowing is the most intimate." So not knowing is entering a situation without being attached to any idea, any opinion, or any concept. Because any time we hold an idea or a concept or an opinion, it creates a filter through which we see the world. If I have the idea that somebody who wears a wool cap is dangerous, I would look at Jeff through a particular filter where I would probably experience the emotion of fear. I would want to protect myself. I would move away from him because I see him through this filter. Now, we all know he's not dangerous. He's a great guy. But if I see him through that filter, then I am not seeing clearly. And that's what not knowing is about. It's the process, which we do through sitting, of dropping all the filters that we have, all the beliefs, all the ideas, and just seeing directly, just seeing directly. So it's total openness to any particular situation. Now, these three tenets all interact with each other. They're not like steps of a ladder. I mean, there is a certain sense of that, but really, if I explain this well enough, you'll see they interact with each other. So that's not knowing. The second one is bearing witness. So bearing witness means that we are present to each other, to circumstances, free of these opinions. We are just there. We are just listening. We are just receiving the world. We are just receiving each other without the ingredient of knowing something. And the other thing about bearing witness is we're not bearing witness to do something. We're bearing witness to receive who or whatever it is that's before us. So we don't enter a situation thinking that we know what to do. And that would be a mistake, because if we start off with what we think should be done, then we're not listening. It's about us, and it's about our opinion, and it's about what's going on in our head. So before we can take action, we have to listen. Listen deeply, which is bearing witness. Now, one description of this is just being there to listen and feel with every bone, with every cell, with every hair of your body, by feeling what's happening and letting the ingredients of the situation arise. And from those ingredients, we make the best meal. So there's something about that, having the experience where we feel it in every bone, every cell, with every hair on our body. That's the energy that's in bearing witness. We're not doing anything. We're being present, but we're doing it in a very deep way. So we prepare ourselves to bear witness by letting go of our filters, which then helps us to be deeply present with whatever is presenting itself to us. Now, I've read this quote before by Dogen, but it also, for me, gives a sense of how to hold the circumstances that are in front of us with this deep respect and caring. And so Dogen said that we should handle each grain of rice as if we were handling our own eyes. So we should handle each situation, each relationship that we have to the situation or to the person, as though when we're bearing witness, we are holding that person as if they were our own eyes. And I would say that's a wonderful definition of loving. So each situation can also be an opportunity to practice ourselves, to learn to go deeper and deeper. And it's like the idea of a Dharma gate. This circumstance or this person presents themselves, and for me or for any of us, it's an opportunity to serve. And if we get caught in, which sometimes happen, you know, at the end of the day, I review what a great guy I was today. That has to go. That has to drop away. Service is for the person that I'm bearing witness to. It's a relationship, but nobody pats the other one on the back, right? Because then the bearing witness, the service, becomes about the server. And so that has to drop away. That's part of the ability to bear witness. Now, I came across this. I don't remember where, but I'll read it to you. The Cherokee warns that when demons are struggling inside you, the one that you feed is the one that will become the strongest. And so there are practices like we do that teach us how to remain centered in order to bear witness. So again, we have to clean our house. We have to take care of ourselves. We have to look at the demons that work through us to successfully go into a place of not knowing and to bear witness to the different things that arise to us. Now, this is a true story, and this comes out of the Auschwitz bearing witness journeys that Bernie has had. I think they've done 20 of them now. It's taken place over 20 years. And talk about a Dharma gate and bearing witness. There was a Jewish man at Auschwitz. He was wearing a yarmulke, and he said to Bernie, "Hitler is my teacher." Now, that's bearing witness. And I won't go into this too much, but the peacemakers do bearing witness retreats. And the two main places these take place are in different places in the world where there has been enormous suffering. And also more active bearing witnesses, which is to go on the streets in various homeless situations. So we have not knowing, bearing witness. And the third is compassionate action, or you could say loving action. And so the first two prepare us, right? We don't take action up front. We clear ourselves out as best we can of the filters that cloud the way we see directly. When we've done that, we move into this place of bearing witness, being totally present. And that should allow us to see the situation clearly. And instead of reacting to it or functioning with it in terms of our filters, that drops away, so now we are seeing clearly, which opens the door for action. So loving action is the ability to see the ingredients of any particular situation. And if we can see those ingredients clearly, then we can serve clearly. We can serve the best we can because we see that in a clear way. So those are the three, not knowing, bearing witness, and compassionate action, is an outline for how do you become a bodhisattva? How do we serve others? And so we have this deep relationship, which in the end functions from a place of love. Now, the reason why I did this in terms of compassion and understanding how to become a bodhisattva is the guys that I work with have a lot of self-hatred. And so I was offering this as a way to change their relationship with themselves. Can you approach yourself in a place of not knowing? Can you bear witness to who you are? And can you, after that, after getting yourself in that place, can you be compassionate to yourself? Can you love yourself? And I think that in terms of the prisoners is extremely important, because healing themselves to me is not just going through the psychotherapies and all the things that they go through. Sex offenders, I'm sorry, I didn't say that. And so I think a huge part of this is for them to learn to be bodhisattvas and turn that ability to be a bodhisattva in their own direction to help in their own healing. And then the last thing I did, there are these meditations called metta, M-E-T-T-A, meditation. And they're about getting us into a place of love. And you can do it for yourself or you can do it for others. And I redid this meditation so that the form was not knowing, bearing witness, and compassionate action. And so there's a meditation that gets repeated over and over again. So that's how I see if anybody is interested in becoming a bodhisattva, go online and read about the Zen Peacemaker Order and those three tenets, because I think they're a very powerful way to become a bodhisattva and a very powerful way to teach ourselves to be in service of others. So thanks.